Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, we are back for another year. I know, guys, it's been a long time between drinks, but we are here. 2018 season is upon us. And so welcome again to the NRL Supercoach Talk podcast. And I'm joined on the other end of the line by a man whose voice could cure a cold. Perso, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good, buddy.
Very good. Are you ready, mate, for the new season? Are you a bit like me? It's kind of... crept up on me like a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, mate, to be honest, I've been busy as a one-legged man in an ass-kicking comp with work and stuff at the moment, working 7 days a week, trying to get a shopping centre over the line. So, sort of has. It's just starting to bite me now, the old Supercoach bug. Haven't that been as deep as I normally am this time of year into it, but I'm creeping up on it.
That's all right, mate. We've got 32 days to go before the first game. But that'll come along very, very quickly. But before we get stuck into what we're going to be planning over the next few weeks, which is to run through some player profiling, position profiling, and just some, you know, summing up all the news and everything, what's been going on, what we thought we'd do is start the season with a little bit of a summary of all the massive changes that have come along this year. So there's been quite a lot, both from a super coach and also an NRL fixture point of view, haven't there, mate?
Yeah, there sure has. There's been all the player personnel changes and coach changes, and just sitting back looking at it, trying to work out rotations of forwards and things like that is particularly difficult this season compared to years gone by. So I think a lot's going to be a lot different. And the comp seems to be even more than it has been as well. So it'll make it interesting for Supercoach.
Yeah, definitely. And it just, I mean, we'll talk about the detail a little bit, but on a face value, it kind of seems like we can actually pick the best players and not have to select those guys that won't be playing Origin and, you know, just cover the first couple of buys, which personally I think would be... I mean, there's two ways. It's obviously going to be less strategic, maybe, but also it's a little bit more fun being able to pick the players that you really want to.
Yeah, it's definitely going to change. You won't have that buy period catch-up for people that the overall coaches have been used to doing that. It's probably going to be even more important than ever before to get your side right at the start and get off to a flying start because, yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to make up the ground as much as you used to be able to.
Yes, I think you're correct, mate. It's all about that round one sign. And speaking about that, how far away are you from having a pretty good... lockdown of the players that you want, or are you very much still in the infancy stage of your selection?
Yeah, keep in mind at the infancy stage deliberately because the last 2 years I've buggered around with my side that much. The last couple of weeks leading into it, that I've pretty much destroyed it and been burning trades for the first 3 rounds, putting the players back in that I shouldn't have got rid of. So I've got a base side there that I'm pretty happy with, and I'll sort of go from there now, wait for TLT and fine-tune it. And things like that.
Historically, mate, have you gone down a pod path or have you been pretty much a cookie cutter team?
Sorry, mate, what's that? Didn't get that.
Have you gone down the pod avenue previously with your starting side, or has it been pretty much a team that resembles a lot of what most other people are picking?
Yeah, I've gone over pod heavy in the past. So I've got a few good ones picked out this year, and then I think you just got to try and have a bit of a look at the better sort of gun players that have got a high ownership, because if you don't have them, you're going to fall behind.
Yeah, that's very true. So am I hearing, mate, that there's probably a couple of sneaky players that you're likely not to mention over the coming weeks and keep them all under wraps until people see your side?
I think there will be a couple. I've got a couple of real sneaky ones, so I'm going to try and keep them on the down low, but I'll probably reveal a few leading into the Supercoach Open.
Yeah, right. I mean, just having a look at the Highstone players at the moment, no surprise with a few, but a couple that have sneaked in that haven't before. I mean, Bryce Cartwright, which we can just talk about now straight away, has moved to the Titans. So he's currently sitting as owned in 50% of sides. What do you think that'll do to his ownership? Will it increase or decrease it?
No, it has to increase it, surely. I mean, pending TLT, where Brennan's going to playing, but you would imagine he'd be going up there and probably slot straight into an edge back row spot. I know it was mooted that Brian James was going to move back to the edge, but with Wallace being suspended for the first couple of rounds, and I'd say the Cartwright signing means James will probably stay in the middle. So, I mean, if he's named in the starting back row, then he's going to be in everyone's side, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. It was firmly lodged in my second row just because of the price, and, you know, there was obviously some off-field issues going on last year too, so I'm hoping that he has a bounce-back year, which most super coaches appear to be with such a high ownership. So after him, you've got Cameron Smith at 48%. I mean, that's no surprise at all. Tane Milne, which is a player that hasn't really, you know, been around the super coach circles that much, but he's owned by a whopping 48%. Does that surprise you, or, you know, you are a Tigers man, so will he be someone you're looking at?
Yeah, if he's named, obviously. The Moses Sirley leaving the Tigers has probably helped him. I have my doubts whether he was going to be picked in the side, to be honest, with Brian Mahe-Fanua, and a lot depends on what Cleary does with Kevin Naglama, I suppose, but potentially that right edge side of Milne and Nofaluma would be fantastic in attack, but a defensive nightmare. So it'll be interesting to see what Cleary comes up with. But if he's named in the centres at 192k, you've got to give him a bit of a go. It was 2 years ago when he was at the Dragons. I can't remember his stats exactly off the top of my head, but he killed it in a couple of games that he played full games in. So yeah, a lot of offloads, a lot of base attacking stats. So but, yeah, I'll definitely have him at 192k. Had been a duel as well, was handy.
Yeah, so just pulling up his stats from last year, I think he covered in a couple of matches. Just let me pull it up now. So he averaged 18 points per game in 11 games played. From memory there was one or two games that he did quite well. But I think the rest of it he had not too many minutes. He averaged only 29 minutes per game. So lots of upside there for him if he can secure a starting. And as you said, that edge with Nofo is just, I think that'd be quite exciting from a super coach perspective with both players, I think, have the ability to really churn out the base points. So that could be one to watch, hopefully. And, you know, moving through the next one we've got there is Lachlan Croker. So that's a bit of the same as Tane Milne. All depends on the round one side selection. He's at 45% ownership, and I think at the basement price of 165. So he looks as if he's going to fill that the last player selected, hoping to get 30 to 40 points per game kind of thing, and just maybe a slow rise cash cow.
Yeah, he's looking the most likely certain cheapy at this stage. So everything you read, those trials will sort it all out, but obviously, if he's known, you're going to pick him, which does create a bit of a headache for people that are trying to load up in their halves, especially that all depends where the cheapies fall, but if they all fall in the halves, then you sort of got to rethink things again. The same with sort of the fullbacks. Tom Wright's another one at Manly that looks like he might be getting a start, and he's available at 5'8 or fullback as well, so, and probably playing in the centre. So where the cheapies fall will probably determine how many guns you load up on in certain positions.
Yep, very true. And one other cheapie, mate, that I think is going to be very, very popular and sitting at 43% is Matthew Lodge. So he returns to the NRL this year after, I think, 3 or 4 years away, and obviously having some issues off the field too. But he looks to have secured the starting prop position for the Broncos with Blair leaving the club. So, I mean, he's firmly rooted in my front row bench at the moment. Same for you.
Yeah, I've got him actually in my starting front row. So if he's starting prop, I'd be pretty certain he'll be punching out low 50s at least. So TLT pending, of course, but yeah, he looks like he just is about as close to a must-have as there is at this point.
Yeah, so yeah, he's definitely that kind of 45-50 that you'd be, you know, maybe even a Jared Wallace type player that we saw last year could last us all the way through to about the bye rounds, hopefully, which would be fantastic. The next two players in the over 40% owned category are Jonathan Thurston and James Tedesco. So no real surprises for either of those two players being so highly owned. I mean, Jonathan Thurston is a player that you know, has divided opinion in prior years, but given that real discount in his price and this being his last year, he'll be pretty keen to try and get the Cowboys across the line.
Yeah, both of them are two of the first players I picked, to be honest. I can't leave either of them out. JT is JT, and even in he only played seven great games last year, he still had two big hundreds in those games. And James Tedesco, his potential could be anything at the Roosters. He's already a gun at the Tigers, so I think they'll be most people's teams.
Yep, I think so, mate. I think so. All right, so that's enough for running through the players. As I said before, we'll step into that over the next couple of weeks. There's going to be heaps of analysis to come. We'll run through forwards, backs, halves, and there should be more than enough information there to cover what everybody is hopefully seeking in the podcast and pre-season for the health of their side. In terms of news, mate, we spoke about Bryce Cartwright, which is obviously a big shock. And that's been confirmed. There's not too much else floating around. I think the only thing that I could think kind of fine was Luke Keary's broken his jaw, but looks to be ready for round one. And then, of course, Jared Haynes moved from Gold Coast to the Eels, which will shake up both sides in terms of how they line up with, I think, Hayne and Gutherson vying for that that fullback position at the Eels. So is there anything else apart from those three items, mate, from a Supercoach perspective that we need to be aware of?
No, not really at this stage. Only other thing I sort of did notice was Gerard Boole is almost certain to be ready for like the first month, so he won't be out at the Warriors for anywhere near as long as that was first thought after breaking his leg in the World Cup, so that might squash any sort of cheapy options that might emerge at the Warriors. But Jared Haynes, an interesting one to see where he ends up in that Boole's back line.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Gutherson played so well there last year and he was such a big part of their success too. So you'd think that he'd get first crack, but obviously Haynes going to be on a bit of coin and, you know, he's the prodigal son returning home. So it'd be very interesting to see where Brad Arthur slots him in.
Yeah, for sure. I'd say Haynes at centre is my guess, but you couldn't move Gutherson after the way he played last year, but who knows?
Agree. Okay, so that just about wraps up the intro and the news. So now we're going to get stuck straight into the main part of the podcast, which is all about changes to Supercoach this year and also the fixture. So let's just jump straight into it. Turn and face the strange changes. Don't want to be a richer man.
To be a different man, thou may change me, but I can't trace time. In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, so changes. Lots of changes happening this year in Supercoach land per se. So, I think there's been about 4 years since there's been some new or additional scoring opportunities and the like, or such a big change anyway. So this year we've got three. The boys at News Limited put out a bit of a some options and people to vote in and to see what they're coming. And then the most amount of votes that came through were for intercept taken, which are plus 5 points, hold attacking player up in goal, plus 3 points, and then kick that goes dead, negative 3 points. So we're just going to run through each of those, and I'm hoping, mate, that you've had a bit of a look to see what the overall impact will be, or particularly how that'll you know, change the way you start to look at your side and maybe some players that you historically hadn't thought of before you start to, you know, might come into contention into your round one outfit. So let's just jump straight into intercept taken, plus 5 points. So what do you think the impact will be of this one in this year?
Pretty minimal. All these changes, a bit of an anticlimax, really. Last year, Nofo had the most intercepts, and it was six. In 24 games, it's an extra 30 points. The best interceptor in the competition. So, you're not really going to pick a player on their intercept ability.
No, and I think after that, you've got Josh Adakar with four, Nick Kotrick with three, and Luke Lewis with three. So, as you said, that's hardly any additional points. So, it is a little bit of a sugarcoating, isn't it? It's not too much really happening on the surface of everything. It's all... you know, it's not a game changer with any of these three, but it's still worthwhile discussing nonetheless. So that's the first one. And I guess, how do you think that'll be pretty easy to administer and to rule for?
Yeah, you would think that one would be about the least grey of any of the Supercoach stats scoring. So it'll be a nice handy little addition when your player gets one, but it's not one that... it's going to be too significant, I don't think.
Yes.
But as you said, yeah, it should be very clean cut, so there'll be no arguing about it.
Yeah, so the official ruling is that only given if a player takes the ball cleanly and his team ends up with possession, a player will not be awarded an intercept if it results in a six again for the other team. So as you said, that should be pretty clear cut, whether it's plus 5 points or not. The next rule change, or next scoring change, sorry, is hold attacking player up in goal. So that's plus 3 points. So that's awarded to a defensive player who holds the attacking player up in goal. Any player who has done enough to warrant a tackle stat would also be given the held up stat. So this one's interesting. How do you think that this is going to impact, just pulling up some stats from last year? So that's maybe a little bit harder to determine, particularly from... you know, who the player, or if they've actually held him up, or how many players are considered to have held him up. Maybe like the flop tackle versus not flop.
Yeah, it's going to be an absolute nightmare. Points-wise, I think Billy Slater had the most last year with five. So, I mean, again, it's not overly significant, but what it will create is everyone blowing up about their player not getting the points awarded. I'm not exactly sure how they determine it. Obviously, I actually thought this would have been a lot higher, but with five for the season is the most. So it's obviously just really clean cut ones where it's one player holding the guy up over the line, you would imagine, or up the player underneath the guy trying to score.
Yeah, it's only really the one where it's going to be like a couple of players in there to a held up, which is going to be interesting to see if they award both. But as you said, it's plus 3 points. It's probably not going to happen more than, say, once or twice a game. I mean, an offload's worth more. So, I mean, that kind of puts it into a little bit of perspective.
Yeah, sure. But largely insignificant.
Agree. Okay, so the kick that goes dead. So this is our only negative point addition this year. So it's a negative 3 points. It's any kick that goes dead, touching goal without being touched by another player. The error must lead to a 20-metre tap and 7 tackles set for the opposition side. So again, this should be pretty clear cut. I think it's quite interesting that it can't be touched because, that's kind of an interesting one. And you know, the ruling on that would be, you know, quite straightforward as well, I guess. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this one? Do you see this having too much of an impact?
No, I don't see it having much of an impact at all. Just going off the stats from last year, Josh McCrone had the most of those with 10 kicks dead. significant players, Sean Johnson and Milford, who were the next with nine. So, I mean, it's barely a point a game. I reckon you'll get those games where a player might do two or three of them in one game, then he's not going to do it again for 8 weeks. So I think, as you touched on, having not touching an opposition player will make that a lot less, that stat. So it doesn't happen as often as what you think it does.
No, and that's what I was just thinking. Quite often during the game, you'll see it where a player will, it'll be a horrible kick, but it'll ricochet off another player or just barely just get touched. And that would normally result in a, you know, potentially a knock-on or something like that, but it's still a horrific kick in the general sense. So you might be only looking at like one or two times a game. So, yeah, the impact there is going to be extremely minimal too. So, I can't see these having too much of an impact overall with, you know, how you kind of select your side. The one additional one which I think would have had a bit more of an impact, which is the one-on-one tackles. That could have been something that, you know, provided a fair bit more amount of points. I'm just looking at an example. So Matchelet last year, his average would have gone from 62 to 66, and Whitehead from the Raiders would have gone from an average of 54 to 58 per game. So, I mean, that's quite an incremental shift upwards per game in compared to these other changes, which is not really having that much of an impact.
Yeah, that would have been a good one. That was one of the ones I was sort of pushing the DT guys when they sort of asked before they made the decision of any ideas for future scoring points, and they didn't listen to a single one of the ones I came up with. Intercepts was a popular one, obviously, but it's largely insignificant. Like all three of them, really, it's not going to have much impact at all on Supercoach this season, I don't believe.
No. The only thing from an intercept one is that if the intercept then results in a try, I mean, a play could almost have, you know, upwards of 40 points off one play. So that'll be that'll be quite fun when that happens. But as you said, there's not too many intercepts that happen throughout the season. So, it kind of seems on face value, mate, that the ones that have been selected are kind of the easiest ones to monitor and to award points to. So there's no real subjectivity in any of them. So, I mean, that makes sense. But it's kind of a question of, you know, do we really need to have them if they're not going to make that much of an impact?
Yeah, that's it. Like I said earlier, it was a massive anticlimax. Like when you're out in the town, you get the hot girl on the dance floor and you bring her home and she turns out to be a starfish, really. So the stats are there. It's something you've done and, you can sort of move on.
Yeah, very well put, mate. Very well put. Okay, so let's move on to the scheduling and trading changes, because this definitely has an impact and far outweighs the scoring changes. So from an NRL draw perspective, there's only two bye rounds this year, and there's a standalone Origin round as well. So let's just work through that. So can you just explain to us when these byes are going to occur and how the standalone Origin round will fare?
Yeah, well, the standalone Origin round, obviously, they didn't have NRL that weekend, so it's you don't have the three big byes anymore. You're really stripping the side to pieces to try and get good numbers for those rounds. It'd be interesting for the NRL too to stop. It'd be a bit fairer with one less interrupted round for the team, so the footy should be a bit better. But Supercoach wise, it's definitely changed the way you're going to put it. Like the first, especially only having two buys every round, except for the Super round, which I believe is that over the standalone Origin, you get the five trades before the second.
That's round 17. There'll be up to five trades available for one round.
Yeah, so I mean that should make it pretty easy to have a decent squad for those two bye rounds as well. So it's really going to put the emphasis on your early season team.
It will, mate, and you can basically throw out the door the strategy of bye planning to a certain extent. Because, you know, there's, as we said at the start, there's going to be certain players which would have been selected in prior years purely on the basis of bye coverage that will never again feature in Supercoach sides. So the likes of a Manu Mao or someone like that, I think, would be highly unlikely to be seen in a Supercoach side ever again.
Yeah, for sure. Those sort of the buy round Muppets that you used to put in that would get you sort of a 50, round of 50 score and help you have four or five of those guys on your side through the Origin period because they played the three big buy rounds, for example. So, yeah, those days are definitely gone. You're not going to bother wasting trades on stuff like that anymore. And the first buy round was always the easiest to get a decent squad anyway because you've got more time to prepare for it. So I'd say everyone will, every serious coach will have a pretty decent side come the first buy round. And then with the super buy round where you can get five players for the next one, even if you only had sort of 10 or 11 players, depending on how you're sitting, you could potentially take a small hit that round anyway. So now it's only one round.
Yeah, definitely. So do you think this makes the game easier or harder?
I think it makes it harder. And coupled with the lack of duels this year, they've really clamped down on the dual position players this season, which I think is a good thing. It makes it a lot more difficult. So strategy is going to come into play quite differently this season.
Yeah, and something that I would have liked to have seen and I still would like to see is the ability to change the player's position throughout the year. So I know for fantasy and also in AFL, equivalent that you can change. So depending on where the player has been playing for majority of the year, you know, there can be a call made to say, you know, such and such was meant to be starting in the second row, but has been playing the whole year in the centres. So let's give him dual position or just make him a centre, or, you know, we started him as a halfback, but has been playing the whole year as a fullback. So give him that dual position. So that's something that I'd like to see, but I know that, the guys at News Limited have pushed back on that a little bit just because, you know, there is some subjectivity associated. But I personally believe that you can be pretty cut and dry with, you know, and how you award that if you were going to do that progressively throughout the year.
Yeah, the common sense rule should apply, shouldn't it, really? The player plays three games or more in one position, he should be given that position on Supercoach, you would think. But it doesn't seem to work that way. Also, you look at the other scale of it that they've cracked down this year, guys like Ben Hunt that didn't get awarded a dual hooker halfback, which caused a fair bit of controversy in Supercoach land. But the reasoning being, I spoke to the guys at DT, they said they believed he only played hooker last year because of an injury crisis at the Broncos, so any likelihood of playing hooker this season is pretty minimal. However, if McInnes goes down at the Dragons this year, I'd say Ben Hunt would be a fair chance of filling in.
Yeah. Agree. I mean, I remember what they when I did inquire about this previously, I was told that the clubs effectively sent in, you know, where they believe that each player will play and their prime positions, and then the positions from there within the game were set as such. But yeah, who knows now with the reduction in dual players. I mean, as you said, I think it's a good thing. It makes it harder. I think last year there was just ridiculous amounts of centre wing second row options available. Someone like an Adam Crichton, which you know, he didn't play a minute in the centres. That's just a prime example of, you know, we should be stripping that dual position flexibility. Although majority of the people that owned him last year wouldn't have thought that, but I think it is only fair, really.
Oh yeah, 100%. And the thing it makes harder is now trying to move on cows. It's a lot harder to shuffle them around with less duels. So you might be going back to the way it sort of was a few years back where you sort of effectively have to use two trades to get rid of a cow.
Yep. Agree. And the last real kind of change for us to discuss, mate, is trades. So trades this year have reduced from 40 to 37, but realistically, it doesn't really make that much of a difference overall because there is one less round of NRL this year. So I think we're gone from an average of 1.6 trades per round to 1.5. So it doesn't really make that much of a difference when you look into the detail of it.
No, that was another thing that was initially a little bit disappointing. If it didn't go down to somewhere around 32 or 34, that would have made it quite tricky. But yeah, look at 37, you sort of effect was pretty much the same. But then when you sort of, you do look at the lack of duels and shuffling players around when you trade, you're probably going to burn through a few more trades. So it might end up being a little bit trickier than we initially think.
Yeah, I personally would have preferred to see you know, around about 30 trades, particularly with the loss of the buy rounds. I mean, there's less trades, I think, that we need, because historically we've had to, as you say, you know, burn trades and have players in there just to cover a couple of weeks. Whereas this year, it's not like this. This year, more than any, it's the sides, overall sides compared to head-to-head sides will be almost identical. So reducing the trades hopefully would have, you know, made the game a little bit more difficult. Because, you know, it has been a little bit easier to plan with. So if you reduce the trades, that it really makes that first round team just so important.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it would have been fantastic. The less trades, the better. But obviously, to keep the masses interested, they've only reduced it by three. But as you said, like, overall it's going to be more like a head-to-head strategy this year. Overall, players will probably have a lot more trades at the end of the season than they normally would. But you can potentially make up a bit of ground late if you've got sort of eight trades left with five rounds to go or something like that.
Yeah, and this could be the first time that we'll have a head-to-head player that's really competing at the pointy end of the rankings as well. Historically, it's been, you know, the guys that have just been focused on, you know, the overall strategy. But this year, those, you know, the head-to-head crusaders will be, you know, probably have sides very, very similar.
Yeah, I agree. A head-to-head player could potentially take it out this season for sure. They're already sort of starting to slide up the ranks a bit more. A good mate of mine is a head-to-head player, came 130th last year. So without the buy planning trade this year, it'll be very interesting to see where the head-to-head players end up with the final rank.
And what did you consider yourself last year, mate? A head-to-head or an overall player?
Overall, but I probably should have gone head-to-head.
Where did you finish the season?
Blew out the last sort of four rounds. I slipped out from about 1,000 to 4,800. So,
geez, that's not good, because historically you've been a much higher rank than that, haven't you?
Yeah, except the last two seasons have been shocking for me. So I'm looking for a bit of redemption this year.
Yeah, I smell an over-reliance on pods, mate.
Yeah, that was definitely it. And destroying my team with putting too many guys in right at the end. I played around with it way too much. That was the thing. The guys that I'd had there originally in the first team, I picked them up, killing it, and then trying to get them back in and just burning through trades, and then you get smashed with injuries. And yeah, so different strategy this season. Leave the team alone.
Yeah, I think you'll... the pod strategy is good, but you've got to pick the right pods, and I don't think you can have too many, which I know that Wilfred also got burnt last year as well. So, mate, we've gone through all the key changes this year, and there has been a fair bit to go through. I mean, from a strategy point of view or anything, is there anything else that we need to kind of to cover before we really jump into the details? So, I mean, this week is a nice, short, sharp, welcome kind of podcast, and next week it's going to be a lot more information contained. So, you know, is there anything that we need to cover now before we, you know, move on to the more detailed analysis?
Yeah, you might rethink your strategy of stacking the pack and stuff this year as much as well, with the important start in mind. It's a risk and reward type of scenario, but I think a lot of super coaches are going to be going a little bit more back heavy than they normally would, particularly looking at a couple of the juicier sort of draws for certain teams, loading up on centre wings and the fullbacks and that have got nice draws early on, even edge back rowers to a degree, trying to chase the early points to give you that boost. It's definitely a strategy I'm looking at. I'm looking at my centre wing a lot stronger starting with than I normally would.
Yep. And what about, you know, what in terms of those sides that do have the easy draw, what's kind of catching your eye at the moment?
Roosters and... Roosters, Storm and Raiders have got pretty nice draws early on. Tigers have got an absolute horror draw. They'll be doing well if they're not 0-7 after the first seven rounds.
Right.
they play all the top four sides from last year. They play the Storm twice in the first five rounds or something like that. It's a hideous draw.
And while I've got you here, mate, how about you just give us a bit of a rundown on the Tigers and how you think they're going to fare this year, so don't have to go into too much detail, but Just give us a bit of an analysis and what you think some of the players that we should be considering from a Supercoach perspective are.
Yeah, contrary to the overexcited, biased Tigers fans out there, I think we're in for another pretty lean year, to be honest. Not overly happy with the signings that we've made, not particularly because guys like Josh Reynolds are bad players, or because they're not, but just with the spine that they've got, Josh Reynolds, like if we still had Tedesco and we bought Cooper Cronk, Josh Reynolds would be spot on. But when you've got Luke Brooks, McKillrick and Lola here as the other spine members, I think we're going to be struggling a little bit there. But Supercoach-wise, not for learners, always great. Very hard to leave him out of my side of living. Milne, if he gets a start, it'd be good. Madalino could be a sneaky one if he can pick up Woods' 60 minutes. Apart from that, I think most of the Tigers would be pretty Supercoach irrelevant unless guys like Eisenhurst can get into the side and that, but I think he'll be struggling to make the 17.
Yeah, so there's a bit of hype around Woods. What are your thoughts there? He got so many minutes towards the end of last season and he went on a bit of a tear there. What are your thoughts on him coming into 2018?
Yeah, Woods, going to the Dogs. I think, well, Spencer Hayes going to be using, I suppose, but he was a post-origin gun last season. He did end up playing big minutes, so I don't think he would quite see those many minutes, but he may well see the offloads continuing, so he could be a really good pod. And Madalena could be similar at the Tigers if he takes Woods' old role last year. Cleary did say last week that he's going for a more attacking style of football this year, so you would believe that would be middle forwards offloading more and a lot of second phase play off Elijah Taylor, so it would be interesting to see how that pans out.
Yeah, and so what was the reason behind Woods getting so many minutes for his final 2 months with the Tigers last year?
Not 100% sure. They didn't have a heap of injuries. I know they dropped over Sione Manafungo because he signed with the Sharks, so he didn't come back into the side. But I don't know if it was just him putting his hand up, wanting to be a bit more of a leadership role or not. But he was pushing 70 minutes quite a lot last year. So, I mean, if he got that again, he'd be an absolute gun. So, it'd be interesting to see how Dean Pay uses him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Under Hasley, obviously had big minute props, particularly with Graham and Tolman. But Graham moving on now, Woods, would have ideally just stepped straight into that role, and he had played big minutes. But as you say, there's no real kind of idea about how he fits into this strategy going forward, and I guess nobody really has a clear kind of idea of how Pay will set the forwards up.
No, it's a total unknown. I think Tolman's the key. Clemmer will probably still see about his same minutes. And there's a bit of talk around that either Elliott or Jackson might move to lock and Clemmer will play prop. So I don't know where Tolman fits in that, but it looks like they're trying to get Raymond Fatala Mariner on the edge. So it'd be interesting to see how the Dogs line up in the trials, and interesting to see the rotations.
So Woods, was it one of your sneaky pods, mate, that I've just unsurfaced, or he's not someone you're looking at?
Yeah, he's currently in the side.
Oh, I could smell it. I could smell it, mate. Sorry. Yeah, I did. I dare say I've had a bit of a think about him, and I did want to ask you why, if there was any particular reason as to why had got so many minutes towards the end of this year, but there doesn't seem to be any clear explanation. Maybe it's just a farewell Tigers thing, but who knows?
Yeah, one thing he did do was find his offload again, which was getting him a few extra points and a couple of, he put Suaso Sue over for a couple of tries, so he got a few sneaky attacking snaps in there as well. So if he can keep the offload going, it'll be... That's his key. He's like Bromwich in that way. Whenever they're offloading and the tackle stats that come with the offload, they're good.
So Aaron Woods is sitting in currently at 3.3% ownership now, mate. So that's a legitimate pod.
Yeah, in the super pod category at the moment.
Super pod. And I think that's in the category of a good pod. There's some of the ones lying around that you go, oh, I've got to have him because he's got such a low ownership. But, there's probably a reason why he's got a very low ownership, where Woods is, you know, has the Supercoach pedigree before, and we saw what he did over the second half of last year. So I'm actually quite surprised that his ownership is that low, to be honest.
Yeah, it is a little surprising. Possibly the change of clubs, but then possibly a lot of people don't like him either. He's one of those players like Mitchell Pearce that a lot of players that Supercoach is out there wouldn't pick him because they can't stand the guy. So it's he's always towards the potty's end. But I've always been a big fan of middle forwards that go on a run post-Origin, and then a lot of them tend to back it up pre-Origin the following season. Jack DeBellin last year was a prime example of that.
Yeah, okay.
He was a massive pot at the start of the season too, so...
Well, mate, to be honest, the front rows are kind of spread all over the place. There's only one player over 40, which is Matthew Lodge, I've spoken to. Sam Burgess is the only player over 30%. And then over 20%, there's two. There's Latu and also Jesse Bromwich. And then the rest, it kind of drops right away. So I think it's fair to say that a lot of people don't really have much of an idea what to do with their front row forwards this year, or a lot of people going in very different ways about how to set up their side.
Yeah, I think front row forward is probably the toughest this year. There's no real standout guy that you've got to say, yeah, I've got to have that guy. And there's potentially a lot of lower end mids or cheapies in that position this year more than normal as well. So, and then guys that it could potentially bounce back, like your Bromwiches and players like that, depending on which way Bellamy goes on the bench. There's talk that he might have young Brendan Smith on the bench there, and Cameron Smith might move into the halves during the game. So if that happens, you would have to think that Bromwich would go back to playing 60-plus minutes again, which with McLean leaving as well.
Yep.
But then you've got Cassiano, who knows what's going to happen with him. So that's you touch on every club, it's all pretty much unknown. It's going to be massive guesswork trying to get your side together for round one, figuring out rotations, and because nothing's as clear-cut as it has been in previous seasons.
Yeah, I'm all over Jesse Bromwich, mate. He was one of my first players selected this year, but we'll talk more about him next week when we do an in-depth analysis of forwards. The one that just caught my eye here, mate, which I just had a little bit of a chuckle while you were going on, then Sam Cassiano is owned by 12% of people, and he's currently the seventh highest selected front row forward in the game.
12%. Yeah, that's a pretty good stat, actually.
Yeah, so he's owned, more people own him than they own Andrew Fifita, James Graham, Kane Evans, Josh Maguire, Paul Vaughan. More people own Sam Cassiano. So it seems those, the Bellamy Fat Club, which has resulted in Cassiano dropping about 20 kilos, all those photos which have been going out in the press of late, they seem to be of providing the opinion that he's going to be playing increased minutes this year and have a stellar Supercoach season.
Yeah, it's another great unknown, isn't it? It's, he's got trap written all over him for mine, but then again, he could play 40 minutes and score an average of 50, so we could get his PPM back up to the way it used to be. So again, the offloading with him will be the key, and how Bellamy's going to use him, whatever he's going to... I'd say Glasby would start with Bromwich, you would think, and then he might roll on with Nass and Cassiano coming off the bench, just steamrolling and offloading. So definitely going to be very interesting.
Nah, trap, mate. Dead set trap. Nass is the one, if there's any of the Storm players to get excited about below that 400,000 category. I think any other club... that if he was that, he would be a starting forward either in the front row or second row. So it would be very interesting to see how he's used at the Storm this year, but he's, you know, one of those players that definitely does have a Supercoach-friendly game about him.
Yeah, and there's been a bit of mail around too that he might be spending a bit of time on the edge this year. So I'd love to see him play 80 minutes on the edge. I reckon he'd be an absolute weapon on the edge running off the Storm spine. So, obviously, Hoffman's back, and Kafusi was very good last year as well. So
yeah,
it'd be interesting to see how the little forwards fit together.
Oh, mate, they've got so much depth. It's scary. It really is. So anyway, we will jump into a bit of that detail next week and have a pretty heavy podcast with one of the other boys jumping on board as well as we run through hooker, front row, and second row. So look forward to that. That'll be a nice pod to get really stuck into. So I think that does us for this time, mate. As I said, a nice short podcast is to introduce and just run through some of the changes overall. And it's lovely to have you back on board for another season, mate. And I know that you're definitely a fan favourite out there. People just love to hear you on the pod.
Yeah, it's good to be back, mate. Obviously, already after this podcast, I've got the bugs bitten even more now, so I'll probably go back and have a little bit of a look at my team. But that was the thing I find with pre-season podcasts, particularly the ones we're going to do next week, and then when you start going through the positions and that, you always go, go back and change my side now. So
yeah,
it's creeping up pretty fast, so it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is. And I actually did it, wrote a South Sydney preview this morning, and I'm looking after that at having about 4 or 5 Rabbitohs in my side. As before that, I wasn't looking at too many. So yeah, it does, mate. As soon as you start doing a little bit of research, it really, you know, it all starts going around in circles in your head. But it's going to be a fun month before we kick off the season, and we've got a heap to get through. So that'll do us, mate. And let's go and watch the Big Bash or whatever you want to do for the rest of your Sunday. And I hope everybody out there enjoyed the podcast. And we will be back next week with, as we said, a positional analysis of forwards. So until then, thank you very much for tuning in. And Perso, I'll let you sign off for us, mate.
No worries. I'll be watching the Big Bash this afternoon, that's for sure. It's, we'll see you next week. Hey, Rube.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.